We are at Ruth 4. It's the last chapter in our study. I'm going to do a short recap, and then our readers' theater folks will come up to read Ruth 4 to us. Ruth is the daughter-in-law to Naomi. Naomi, Ruth, and Orpah, not Oprah. Orpah, all their husbands died. Orpah returns to her family, and Ruth and Naomi stay together. And Ruth says to Naomi, "Where you go, I will go. Your people will be my people." So Ruth and Naomi go to Bethlehem, and it's at the beginning of the barley harvest, which barley's kind of a player in this, not a player, a character, a piece of this story. Ruth gleans among the barley, and Boaz protects her and is generous to her. Ruth 3 outlined the strategy, or whatever word you want to use there, conniving for some, strategy, of Ruth and Naomi. And Ruth goes to the threshing floor to let Boaz know she's available. And that brings us to chapter 4. And so after our readers have read chapter 4, I'm going to ask, what did you notice? What sticks out to you? So be reading with that lens, and then a microphone will be walked around so that we might highlight some parts of Ruth 4, believing that God is here, God is moving, God is speaking. And so I'm excited to hear what we notice together in Ruth 4. So readers, theater folks, if you wouldn't mind coming up to read for us.
Straight to the public square and took his place there. Before long, the closer relative, the one mentioned earlier by Boaz, strolled by.
"Step aside, old friend,"
said Boaz.
"Take a seat."
The man sat down. Boaz then gathered 10 of the town elders together and said,
"Sit down here with us. We've got some business to take care of."
And they sat down. Boaz then said to his relative,
"The piece of property that belonged to our relative, Elimelech, is being sold by his widow, Naomi, who has just returned from the country of Moab. I thought you ought to know about it. Buy it back if you want. You can make it official in the presence of those sitting here and before the town elders. You have first redeemer rights. If you don't want it, tell me, so I'll know where I stand. You're first in line to do this, and I'm next after you."
He said,
"I'll buy it."
Then Boaz added,
"You realize, don't you, that when you buy the field from Naomi, you also get Ruth the Moabite, the widow of our dead relative, along with the redeemer responsibility to have children with her to carry on the family inheritance."
Then the relative said,
"Oh, I can't do that. I've jeopardized my own family's inheritance. You go ahead and buy it. You can have my rights. I can't do it."
In the olden times in Israel, this is how they handled official business regarding matters of property and inheritance. A man would take off his shoe and give it to the other person. This was the same as an official seal or personal signature in Israel.
So when Boaz's redeemer relative said, "Go ahead and buy it," he signed the deal by pulling off his shoe. Boaz then addressed the elders and all the people in the town square that day.
"You are witnesses today that I have bought from Naomi everything that belonged to Elimelech and Chilion and Mahlon, including responsibility for Ruth, the foreigner, the widow of Mahlon. I'll take her as my wife and keep the name of the deceased alive along with his inheritance. The memory and reputation of the deceased is not going to disappear out of this family or from his hometown. To all this, you are witnesses this very day.
All the people in the town square that day, backing up the elders, said,
Yes, we are witnesses. May God make this woman who is coming into your household like Rachel and Leah, the two women who built the family of Israel. May God make you a pillar in Ephrathah and famous in Bethlehem. With the children God gives you from this young woman, may your family rival the family of Perez, the son Tamar bore to Judah.
Boaz married Ruth. She became his wife. Boaz slept with her. By God's gracious gift, she conceived and had a son.
The town women said to Naomi, Blessed be God. He didn't leave you without family to carry on your life. May this baby grow up to be famous in Israel. He'll make you young again. He'll take care of you in old age. And this daughter-in-law, who has brought him into the world and loves you so much, why, she's worth more to you than seven sons.
Naomi took the baby and held him in her arms, cuddling him, cooing over him, waiting on him hand and foot.
The neighborhood women started calling him Naomi's baby boy, but his real name was Obed. Obed was the father of Jesse, and Jesse the father of David.
This is the family tree of Perez. Perez had Hezron.
Hezron had Ram. Ram had Amminadab. Amminadab had Nahson. Nahson had Salmon. Salmon had Boaz.
Boaz had Obed. Obed had Jesse. And Jesse had David.
Well, friends, what do you notice? Let's get Paula in the microphone, just so those that on Zoom can hear.
Oh, Boaz is dealing. But wait, there's more. Forgotten that property was involved in this deal. The community of women that surrounded Ruth and Naomi.
I noticed the word redeemer.
Ruth, the foreigner, is in the lineage of Jesus.
I'm wondering about and trying to understand the cultural differences and just how significant family lines are and how your life continues through your children. And I mean, I think in our culture, we might try and live vicariously through our kids, and we use that phrase and stuff, but I think this is a different understanding or level or something that I struggle to understand.
Yeah, certainly throughout scripture, they will talk about generations being blessed from you, and this book is very specific to add, even in the lineage at the end, that we know that Ruth and Boaz, you know, if they hadn't been together, who knows what the lineage of Jesus would have been. I mean, it's explicit. Some scholars even say, like, oh, that part was added in after, but it is in there to make a point that this lineage is super important.
I'm struck by something that resonates with something someone said earlier in terms of family and adopted family. Your daughter-in-law who loves you is worth more than seven sons down to him. So the idea of adopted family is worth more than biological family seven times.
Or one could even say the family you choose, right? Because Naomi and Ruth were in-laws, but really there was no blood that, you know, and Ruth was very explicit in saying, I choose you. I'm going with you.
I guess I haven't noticed before how much this, I assume it's the story of Ruth, but it seems to all come back to Naomi's reflections from the very beginning up until the very end, how much it talked about her reaction to the new baby. And she's not in the lineage, so that's not the point of that. But I wonder, like, her character really comes out and it follows her closely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a piece of that that really bothered me last week that ties into what you said, Jody, because we learn that the practice of kinsman redeemer, you know, that this family member is supposed to step in to care for Naomi. And because Ruth is Naomi's now, they get her too. And that's all interesting. It's probably a whole nother sermon, really. But the kinsman redeemer, this, we tease that Andy's nickname was Mystery Man because this, the person with the first right of refusal, let's say that, doesn't even have a name. So it's some mystery person and who gets the first option to purchase the property and then getting the women. But it took all this strategizing by Naomi to set the ball rolling. And it really bothered me. Like, if that was the practice, why didn't the kinsman redeemer step in and say, oh, here I am. This is my role. I'm supposed to do this. And for that process to be kicked off, because that's what was expected. That was the right thing to do. And I found myself struggling along with Jared, like, where's the ethics in this? How come it takes Naomi saying, oh, go to the threshing floor and do this. Let's make sure he knows you're available. So if you were hoping for a neat and tidy bow today, I don't have one for you. The Book of Ruth is very interesting to me about the role, our role in God's faithfulness, our role in taking steps of faith and trust so that God blesses, God gives chesed, God's mercy. The Bible commentary that I was reading pointed out themes of abundant harvest, overflowing blessings, new life where there is only emptiness. And it's true that those themes are absolutely there. All of this is made possible through the chesed of God enacted by Ruth and Boaz, ordinary people who demonstrate extraordinary love and faithfulness. And that might be there, but the text doesn't say Ruth loved God so much that she was doing this, or God told Ruth to do this, or God told Naomi to do this. I think the key there is that it was enacted by Ruth and Boaz that it wasn't done solely on God's part. In fact, it talks about the two times that God directly intervenes in the book of Ruth. And the first time is in chapter 1, where it talks about that God, 1:6, that Naomi started to return with her daughter-in-laws from the country of Moab, for she had heard in the country of Moab that the Lord had considered his people and given them food. So God directly intervened by giving food. And then the only other time in Ruth that it talks about God directly intervening is at the end. Ruth 4:13-14. So Ruth became Boaz's wife. When they came together, the Lord made her conceive, and she bore a son. All the other has said of God is in a relationship of actions that Ruth and Naomi take, that God then blesses. Clearly, the lineage of Jesus is part of it. So I think that's an interesting question for us, for you individually, for us as a church. Is there something God is waiting for you to take action on? Are there ways of steps of faith that we take individually or as a church that God is saying, boy, I was just waiting for you to do that so I could bless you with a son, so I can bless this lineage, so I can do my thing? I was thinking a lot, of course, I think a lot about Peace Trail Village, but I was thinking about the word subversive, you know, that Nate was teasing out last week. And you could say that North Valley's been subversive for a while. Some folks absolutely are saying that we've allowed folks to camp up here, to sleep in their vehicles or their RVs. And I was making parallels, and maybe that's more my frame of mind than maybe what's there. I'm certainly open to that pushback, because I want to have integrity with it. But I was thinking about how we were helping out folks that were desperate. And Ruth and Naomi absolutely were desperate. Traveling back to Bethlehem, gleaning because they need food, they're desperate. When folks come up and ask if they can pitch a tent, it's not because it's so awesome to do, it's because they're desperate. And I think, at least the hat I wear when I'm encountering someone is, if you have come to the church asking for help, then our job as the church is to respond if we can, to say yes, that's part of following Jesus. And I feel like then out of that place comes this vision for Peace Trail Village. We weren't trying to be subversive or political. It just seemed right to not turn away folks in need. So I guess I'm standing here going, okay, God, I'm ready for the chesed. Or what's the next step that we take in faith to be in alignment with God so that God's faithfulness can come through? And so we'll enter a time of waiting. You can ask that question. Is there something God's waiting for you, for us to take action on? Or what is the message for you or for us from the book of Ruth? I think there's another query. No? Oh, there it is. I wrote some and Nate wrote some. Yep, they're about the same thing. That's good. And let's go into a time of waiting worship. And if you have something for all of us, I invite you to stand and share so the microphone can be brought to you. Let's listen together.